Podcast.
I am one of the few people who think the Patriots are actually going to be really good this year.
Let's go!
Oh, God.
It's me. It's Kevin Wiles.
What a shocker. Surprise.
All right, welcome to the latest R Bill Simmons podcast, and thank you again to Wiser Times for the excellent intro song. So we have on a guest today who he has created a website that I think everyone will be very interested in visiting and checking out, and there's some nostalgia there. So why don't I welcome in Bridger. What's going on, man, and thanks for coming on the pod.
Thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be here, and hopefully that new Grantland has some good reception. So I'm really looking forward to this.
Yeah, so that's the site New Grantland and newgrantland.com, and you had posted in the R. Bill Simmons subreddit or the Bill Simmons subreddit and posted the link to the website. I popped on a ton of great stuff there. It's fantastic. And it got me thinking I had to have you on because – as someone who loved Grantland so much that they have dedicated a lot of time and effort to doing a new Grantland, that's just somebody that the R. Bill Simmons podcast has to have on. So I think we have to start with Grantland itself. And what did you love so much about Grantland that has inspired you to create this new website?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I have a lot of this explained in some of the articles, but to go over it, and I know you know, but just for the people listening, basically, when I was in middle school in 2015, that's when Grantland was at the height of its powers. That's the year that it ended. And so before that, in middle school and high school, I would visit the website every day when I got home. What I enjoyed about it was that there was stuff about pop culture, there was stuff about sports, there was stuff about politics. And I felt like there was nothing else on the internet where you could go and get that sort of information that was digestible, but at length. And so what kind of drew me to each one of the writers was they had their own voice. And I wanted to become a writer after that because the website was inspiring me. And Bill Simmons himself, I'm a huge Celtics fan. So every time he would be such a homer for the Celtics, I'm right there with him for all of that. That's really what drew me to the website. And then it was in college when I had to write this essay about discourse and things, somebody that has authority to speak on a concept. That's when I first started to think maybe there's something there for a sequel or something to kind of be a love letter to Grantland.
Yeah, and Grantland, so I'm a little bit older than you. It was really in the height when I was in college, but I certainly remember all of my college buddies were reading it every day. I mean, this was one of those things when the laptop went up in class, people were on Grantland. They weren't taking notes.
Yep.
Let's be honest here. And yeah, it's funny you mentioned that it inspired you because I distinctly remember multiple conversations I had with multiple groups of friends in the Grantland era saying, hey, we should launch a Grantland type of website. Hey, we got like you got baseball, I got football, I know this guy's got basketball, and we can basically do our own thing. So I imagine that I wasn't the only one having those conversations. You weren't the only one thinking that you would want to be writing for a site like that. So that's why it's so freaking awesome that you actually went out and did it and have this site now.
Thank you so much. And it's funny that you mentioned that you talked to buddies like you got sports or you got baseball, you got football, because I've largely done this alone. And something that for the people listening, if you're somebody that has that love for Grantland and sees yourself as a writer, please hit me up. I'm always taking submissions. I'm always wanting more people. That's something that made Grantland really special was that it was a group of people. It wasn't just Bill Simmons. Not that I'm Bill Simmons, but I mean, like it wasn't just one guy getting this done. So
yeah, well, and that's why I think if we want to talk about Bill's Apex Mountain, I think it has to be during Grantland at some point because he brought together this incredible site. And And he admitted that he didn't have his fastball at 99 miles per hour because he had Zach Lowe for NBA. He had Bill Barnwell for NFL. He had Jonah Carey and then Ben Lindbergh for baseball. And then he had some NHL writer. And then he had a variety of pop culture people. So for people listening that weren't around for Grantland, it truly was, you visit this at least one time a day. And when you visited the site, you basically read every article because you read the guys that you knew. You read, like, I'm more of a sports fan, so I read the sports guys. But then you were open to trying pop culture. And I think it what Bill Simmons did so beautifully, melding pop culture into his columns, he then expanded it and was able to meld pop culture into a website where, yeah, maybe a sports fan wasn't going to do 100% of the pop culture, but they had a ton of great pop culture columns for sure. And so I think, yeah, there's probably people out there that are too young to have experienced it. It really was, for a lot of people, the last website you truly visited at least once a day for good content instead of going to Twitter links or what have you now.
Absolutely, 100%. Yeah, I've yet to find anything that scratches that itch for me.
Well, and it's not The Ringer, right?
It's definitely not The Ringer, which is upsetting. Every once in a while, The Ringer will have something that seems like it should be on Grantland. Like Jonathan Jarks wrote a piece called "Does My Son Know You?" about fatherhood, cancer, and what matters most. And that was on March 3rd, 2022. That would have fit right in on Grantland. But it's few and far between on The Ringer. And it felt like that was something that would happen almost every single day on Grantland.
Yeah, and it feels like with The Ringer, it's a lot of those short form reactions, top 10 things. And they had some of that at Grantland, but it was more of, it would be, hey, like a big award show. And then the next day you'd have, you know, 15 different contributors of the site writing a paragraph. And that was fun. That was great. That was okay. You know what? I'll read that. Maybe I won't agree with everybody, but, you know, a big moment happened and I want to be reading about it. Or here's some interesting takes about this award show or the Super Bowl that I could talk about with friends or coworkers the next day. And then I think what the Ringer does is it doesn't do that, but it has these instant reactions, winners and losers. And it's sort of, what, why are we even reading this? I mean, this is basic stuff that, you know, and the good stuff, like you said, it just gets lost because no one really thinks of the Ringer as a place to go for longer form commentary, which was Grantland's forte.
Absolutely. I mean, and the sad part about it is, like, there's no reason it had to stop other than money and greed. And unfortunately, we talked about this a little bit before the show. It's like Bill almost sold his soul for the almighty American dollar, which I hate to say, but he's like, when you click on stuff, everybody can see the page views. Everybody can see how much money is getting made. And unfortunately, Grantland had this idea where they didn't have to do that. It was always content over clicks until ESPN Big Brother realized, well, actually we need the clicks and shut it down. And it seems like The Ringer wasn't built with that same principle that Grantland was.
Okay. So you think it was an editorial conscious decision to structure The Ringer differently than Grantland?
Absolutely. I think The Ringer, and I mean, every website these days, especially ESPN, has gone towards a form where they are trying to make money. They're trying to get engagement, and engagement makes money. Whereas Grantland was always content over clicks. I mean, Bill Simmons said it himself. He said, I'll worry about the page views later. I don't really care, but the content out. Whereas now things are made, will people click this? Will we even run this story? And I mean, I'm lucky that I work for a news agency that's called Foley Online, where we are always thinking content over clicks. And I'm so fortunate that I can work for a place like this. It's St. George News in Southern Utah, in St. George, Utah. It is such a blessing to work there. And you just don't get that a lot. And so we're starting to get attention from big media conglomerates like the New York Times and stuff like that are looking at this little online newspaper that I work for. And this is not me promoting them. I'm just saying this is the exception. And I'm glad that I can pursue something professionally that doesn't have to sell out, quote unquote.
Yeah, it's interesting because it seems like the ad-supported digital media is really having a tough go right now. And I think, like, look, ESPN's paying Zach Lowe a lot of money and Bill Barnwell. And I always thought that the reason that there was a bit of an issue between Bill and ESPN at the later stage of Grantland was because ESPN is just, you know, this ESPN.com is visited by how many people every day, you know, week, month, incredible. And so that homepage of ESPN was such a valuable real estate because whatever the lead story is, you're basically going to click on it, right? It's a lead story. Maybe Bill had a couple of boxes with Rick Riley that was there on the site, and then they have the articles to the right with the links. And I think maybe some of the consternation was Bill wanted ESPN.com to give more. He wanted them to give more links to Grantland, but Grantland didn't monetize as well as ESPN.com because it was a pretty basic layout, didn't have much ads, didn't have video ads. And so I think maybe that's the issue where ESPN goes, well, we love having Zach Lowe and Bill Barnwell. Their content's incredible, but we can't monetize on Grantland. We can monetize better on ESPN.com. And now what do you have? You have ESPN Plus is home to some of these Lowe and Barnwell columns. So even ESPN.com is finding out that we need to monetize a little bit differently than just the normal website. And so if that's the case, then Grantland is probably never going to work long term, and The Ringer probably is more a front and a location for people to grow their brands in order to then podcast and make money podcasting.
I think you hit it exactly on the nail. It's not a place where journalistic integrity or creativity is really fostered. It's a place where monetization is always in the back of your mind. And that's something with New Grantland. I will never, WordPress keeps automatically putting ads on the website. I keep trying to opt out of that service. I was a paginator at a website, at a newspaper, which means I was in charge of page layout. So I understand how page layout works with advertising, but I never want to do that with New Grantland. I want everything to always be forward facing and have the ads. If there's ever going to be any actual advertising, which I don't want there to be, anything user facing, you're not going to see any advertisements. And I think that's super important to keep the Grantland vision alive.
Yeah, 100%. And I guess I would love to, one day maybe we'll get this. What's funny is Bill launched, wasn't one of the first articles he did. He did an oral history of, do you remember the newspaper? It was like a short-lived newspaper.
He would put out those quarterlies.
No, I'm thinking Grantland was the evolutionary this newspaper, and like Tony Kornheiser wrote at it. I'm forgetting it. I wish I could have it, but basically he did an oral history of this. It was meant to be a like top tier magazine newspaper with all these hot columnists, and it sort of was funny because Grantland kind of became that where we look back on it and had this incredible run. But what I would love is I'd love to truly get what were the financials of that place. If Bill hadn't left, could it have been kept? Because we've gotten, they came out with a 538 and their financials were terrible. I forget exactly what it was, but it was something crazy. Like 538 was bringing in 4 million of revenue, but they had 12 million of expenses or something. It was something nuts. So that's why I'd love to know about Grantland, because Bill probably would argue if they did a couple things differently, it could have made money. And like, maybe that's the case, but then it's also just hard to say that with a lot of confidence, because digital media has been in such battle recently. You look at all these different digital media companies either folding or selling for, you know, a tenth of what they previously raised money at. I mean, it's tough out there.
It's absolutely tough. And I don't know if I would agree with this hypothetical Bill stance where he would argue, I think Grantland was always going to be too beautiful, too big to make it, unfortunately. I mean, Zach Lowe himself must cost, I mean, at least six figures. I mean, Bill Simmons was lucky that it ran as long as it did, but that's because it was awesome. It truly was awesome. Unfortunately, what happened happened. And I don't know if – I think as long as Bill was around, they would have found a way to maybe, instead of doing a hard shutdown and then years later launching the Ringer, maybe they could have done a soft transition to something else. But I think eventually it was always going to be failure, unfortunately.
Yeah, which you hate to hear and know, but hey, at least we had it for a few years, which is great. And now we have a new version with yours. But I also so a piece on the website, so I would encourage people to check it out. So you guys know me, speaking to the audience here, love sports media, I'm always commenting on it. And you have a piece, is it called The Contextualizer? Or it might be inside of one of your pieces.
Right. So the headline of the story is, it took 4 years, but I did it. Perfect. And I called it that because it's the story of how I came to the idea of having new Grantland, and kind of when the idea brewed. So from the idea when I wrote this essay called The Contextualizer, which was the first time that I had cited Bill Simmons and kind of talked about this content over clicks and this birth of the hot take artist and stuff like that, was in my sophomore year of college. And then from then until when I launched the website early in 2023, I had sat on the idea, and finally I just thought, screw it, I'm going to do it.
So do you want to touch on maybe some key thoughts and points from that? Because I thought it was fascinating. I love the read.
Yeah, absolutely. So basically, I was assigned to write an article about discourse, which is defined as speaking or writing authoritatively about something. So in the past, when something would happen, news reporters would actually vet the information and then put it out in print. So you knew what you were getting was hard reporting, objective fact. What ended up happening was, over time, it's that the journalists used to be trusted with the information. It was their job to report objectively and honestly. And unfortunately, I put in the article, "The Internet Killed the Journalist," to read directly from the article. Before social media, the only group that wrote about the world as it happened was a small community of journalists and reporters. And the TV anchors and newspapers used to be our primary sources of gathering that information. But with social media, and this is veering off from the post now, with social media, anybody can see a car accident and say, "Holy cow, I saw it flip 5 times. Whereas the reporter would come in, "Oh, it flipped twice. It was heading northbound." And social media sort of democratized information for good and for bad. And unfortunately, the same thing happened to sports websites. The same thing happened to newspapers as they die off. You used to be able to pick up a newspaper, and you still can in some places, and read about what happened at the game. But now, places like ESPN, they found out that people don't want that. People don't want that. What they want is the hot take. They want to say, "Oh, this happened at the game." And the reason that I say people don't want that is because they found out that outrage and controversy drives the click to the story. And then, so people aren't reading these facts about what happened and then engaging with it. They are less likely to leave a comment. If you read an article and you disagree with it, chances are you're probably going to comment. And so that one little nugget of seed that was planted has spiraled into the place that we are now, where we have Stephen A. Smith running the show on ESPN. And remember when you would tune into ESPN, I'm sure you remember, and you'd get raw highlights. You'd say, "This is what happened at the game." Where is that these days?
Yeah, no, that was totally. So yeah, so I'm in my early 30s, and I missed the Dan Patrick and Keith Olbermann, but I've heard about them essentially being late night TV with highlights, and that is so foreign, right? The idea that you could have personalities doing highlights and having funny commentary and whatnot. I grew up in just the Stuart Scott, John Anderson era, where it was highlights with some funny sayings here and there. But yeah, you're right. It's gone fully to First Take, and a lot of people dislike that, or a lot of people claim to say they dislike that. So sometimes you hear Bill on his pod will go, "You know, I would never do it like this, but I happened to catch First Take.
Yeah,
and I wanted to respond to this." Or he'll do the pod where he's like let's imagine we're on First Take. Like, what would be the top stories that we talk about in First Take? So he essentially does First Take, but he has he's framing it to the audience like he's not. So he's doing it. Everybody's watching it, but it comes down to the first take sells. This is why Stephen A. Smith is such a star. This is why people pay attention to it, because they love this stuff. And I think, you know, me and you can be here, and I think we would agree that we like the in-depth type of analysis. But in reality, even myself and probably you, but then just in general, it's harder to get people to sit down and take the time to read. It's much easier to surf Twitter and condense, you know, have 180 character or however much it is takes. And, you know, everybody who's like, if you're in sports media and you're not on Twitter, what are you doing? Because it's a way to communicate. It's a way to follow the news. And it's a way to link to those few articles that you might be writing. And even I feel like the articles these days, and I think this is probably just societal in nature, but it's, you know, it's shorter paragraphs, it's shorter sentences. The articles themselves aren't that long. So we've gone so much in that direction because that's sort of where everything's going. It was part of why Grantland was such a great idea in the first place, because it was going against that. And I think Bill even specifically said that, like, I want it to be a longer form site. And it's just kind of unfortunate that there aren't more of those around now.
Exactly. Exactly. And to your point about the TV anchors, we knew of the Stuart Scotts, but what we were tuning in for was the sports and the information itself. And there just happened to be an anchor now, or an anchor there. But kind of what's happened is the sports have almost become the backdrop to the Stephen A. Smith show. And you're 100% right. Everything is going that way. And that's beyond my scope of I guess, what I want to get into. But yeah, everything has kind of turned into the talking head. And it's unfortunate. It's truly unfortunate. The information used to kind of be at the forefront, and now it seems like the talking head and the personality has come before anything else.
Well, and you wrote in that piece that Bill was sort of straddling. He was kind of doing both, where he was the talking head, but he also had the analysis behind it. And that's kind of why people liked him a lot, was because when you read a Bill Simmons column, okay, yeah, it wasn't a Zach Lowe column, but it still contained pretty solid analysis. And I've talked on this pod before that Bill was very early in embracing, for example, advanced statistics in various sports, the NBA specifically. For some reason, he's totally gone the opposite way now. And I think 2024, Bill Simmons knows even less NBA analytics than 2012. Although he does sometimes cite the like the lineups and the plus minuses, different groups, whatever, fine. But so I thought he did a good job of having that stuff. And then, yes, you would get your patented Bill Simmons eye test and chemistry discussion, and then you get some pop culture thrown in. So, yeah, so I think he did a great job of that. And and maybe we can, you know, just the general decline of Bill Simmons, but I don't think the analysis part is there as much anymore. And maybe it's because he feels like, look, what does he even do analysis for? He can be a talking head fully. He can just be Bill Simmons spouting off opinions, and it's not going to change the listenership, at least in his mind. And so he just does it.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that has to go with Bill Simmons's fall off is kind of his want to become more of a podcaster, but he came up as a columnist. So when he is on the podcast and he kind of spews off these off of the head Bill Simmons type comparisons, which are funny most of the time, some of the time, and are good. When you're a columnist and you're a writer, you have time to sit down and fine tune things and really do the contextualizing. Whereas now in that kind of Spotify, Apple Music, get the podcast out type of thing, he comes off as not as well researched or not as well thought out. And that's solely because he's kind of moved to this talking head away from being a contextualizer. And in the article, the contextualizer is a combination of the analyst, the Zach Lowe type, the talking head, the Stephen A. Smith type, and the newsbreaker, the Adrian Wojnarowski type guy. And it seems like he's slowly veering away into that talking head role.
Well, and it's interesting too. So you say, so you don't listen to much of Bill on pods?
Not anymore, no.
Interesting. So is that you're not a podcast guy, or you're not a BS podcast guy?
It's funny because I went to college for media, and I make so much media for the job I have. So I write one article a day. I have to make a video for it, and I have to make all the imagery for it. So that by the time I get off work, I'm just mediated out. All of my free time in media that I want to spend goes into New Grantland. So it's not that I don't watch many movies or TV shows these days. So my pop culture references are getting a little worse. But it's not that I'm not a podcast guy. It's just I spend so much time and effort like creating media that by the time it comes around to consuming more of it, it's a lot harder for me.
You know, I have read that before from like people who work on TV. They just don't watch much TV at all because they know what goes into a TV show. And they're just like, I don't even want to, because I know where my brain's going to go if I watch something.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. Once you know how the sausage gets made, then you're kind of like, I can take it or leave it. And I've spoken, this is not uncommon in the journalism industry. A lot of people put their novels on pause. A lot of people put their stuff on pause. But I've actually made most of New Grantland when I was still searching for a job in journalism. And now I put up an article when I can. But it also gives me more time to fine tune stuff to put up there to really, really do it. And a lot of the most recent stuff, now that I am a professional journalist, is a lot more grant. I keep using the term Grantland worthy in my own head. Like I have articles that I've been sitting on that I read them back. And I'm like, it's not Grant. If it couldn't go on Grantland, I don't want to post it.
Nice. I love that. So that's interesting then because the way that Bill is viewed and interpreted now is through the BS pod alone, basically. I mean, maybe a YouTube clip here and there. I do think it was funny. I talked about it on episode 55, I think, that he should be doing YouTube. He should be doing short form video, and he comes out and does a YouTube short. So that was funny. But yeah, that was interesting. So, okay. So basically like the last time you've interfaced with Bill has been his Ringer columns then. Is that right?
Yeah, early Ringer columns. And then I read a few and I knew this was not headed in the direction Grantland was. So I guess in my head, it's almost like, how do I want to put this? Like Bill retired with Grantland almost. His career was almost over. Like imagine if LeBron stopped playing after he won that Cleveland title.
Yeah.
And then after that, and then when people say, well, he's not as good as he was now that he's on the Lakers. Well, he's older. He doesn't have the same cast around him. If he was still surrounded by the Zach Lowe's and the guys that he had on Grantland, maybe he would be a little bit less insulated in his own head. But yeah, the Bill that I hold up on the pedestal, he talks about this in the Book of Basketball. When you talk about how great someone is, you always got to give a year. Bill is the 95-96 Michael Jordan. That is Grantland era Bill Simmons. That is 12-13 LeBron. That's kind of how I will always see Bill Simmons in my head. And I try not to interact with him too much these days because I don't want to almost taint the image I have of, like, it's like never meet your heroes, you know?
You know, frankly, that probably was a smart idea because I'm sitting here doing the R. Bill Simmons podcast, hating on Bill for the most part because I think he's so washed up. So that is funny. But okay, so you really didn't listen to much podcast even before, or did you?
No, I've never been a big podcast person. I will say I relocated from Southern California up to Southern Utah, which is about a 6-hour drive every time I make it. And I go back pretty often. I'm up in Southern Utah now to work for the St. George News. And when I do drive back, I will consume podcasts. But I've gone for J.J. Redick now. J.J. Redick is kind of scratching that Grantland era Bill Simmons for me, where he'll have kind of – where he's still well-versed in what the sports world is doing, but at the same time, he'll throw a hot take out there every once in a while. But he's in good enough standing with these celebrities and these, well, celebrity athletes, that it doesn't feel phoned in. It feels very authentic. And I miss the authenticness of Bill Simmons, I suppose.
Okay, so that's another thing I've talked on this pod, JJ Mark correcting Bill. Because Bill used to have on a bunch of NBA players. He really does anymore, but... And now the media game is definitely different. I mean, if you think back to kind of the prime era Bill, I think, yeah, you had it. You said his prime was 2009 to 2015. He was doing interviews with basketball players, and they were great. But you didn't have as many J.J. Reddicks that were out there doing a podcast and having close relationships with these guys. But I still think that even with guys like J.J., I do think Bill could be doing more, and – And I guess he doesn't. But yeah, so on that, 2009, 2015, and then you said peaking in 2009 following the Book of Basketball.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I ate the Book of Basketball. I got it 1 year for Christmas, and I didn't put it down until it was done.
It really was epic.
The pyramid of how the Hall of Fame should be, that is peak Bill Simmons. That is absolutely that is the Bill Simmons that I strive to be. The guy that takes this abstract concept and just sells you on it. Then he also drops these references with sports and pop culture. Man, like that's like the prime stuff. And that's the type of stuff that I really want to get on the website. But I mean, at the same time, I recognize that I'm still a rookie journalist, so I have quite a ways to go. And Bill Simmons is, I mean, as far as columnists go, as good as they come.
Yeah, he's on the Mount Rushmore for sure, if not the GOAT. I mean, maybe some people would argue like a Rick Riley or something, but no, I think Bill changed the game enough that he is the greatest columnist of all time. Even if you don't think his work is technically proficient, which some people will argue, I do think he's up there. But yeah, I think I've actually been surprised. I feel like most people that I've even had in this podcast have not read the Book of Basketball. And I just say that's crazy, because if you are somebody who is willingly going on a podcast dedicated to Bill Simmons, then you're way the person that should be reading this book. You should read the Book of Basketball, and you should definitely read the Red Sox book. Now, have you read the Red Sox book?
No, I'm not a baseball guy though, so that's my defense.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, it is so baseball focused. There's definitely a few columns that are not. There's one in particular I'm thinking of that's not baseball at all. But are you really going to be reading the book for that one column?
I am such a basketball guy. Like I know I can watch football and I can watch baseball and I get what's going on. But like I couldn't tell you who coaches what team. But for the NBA, I could tell you every roster down to the 15th man. I could tell you the top PERs on each team. I'm really invested into basketball. So I on Grantland, I tended to get towards there. And I have this I had somebody actually reach out to me for New Grantland, and they were worried about the legality of me making New Grantland. Huh. About so I actually retained an attorney, and I asked, and she said I'm fine. And my parents ask me this a lot, like, well, what are you going to do if you get a cease and desist from Bill Simmons? I'm like, are you kidding me? That's the dream. That would be awesome. If Bill Simmons found out about this and he thought it was close enough to Grantland that it was flying too close to the sun that he wanted it shut down, that would actually be amazing for me. You know what I mean? In kind of an odd way.
Yes. And I totally agree. Now, yeah, and Bill is not even on ESPN, so how could he even say that? But yeah, I thought the same thing where you know, and like, yeah, is Bill ever gonna not be that happy with the podcast titled Our Bill Simmons Pod, and like depending on what the logos or anything in the pod would be. But yeah, so far nothing. So
yeah, I mean, I like to think that he would be proud. He seems enough like a reasonable enough guy with like a good sense of humor. But I don't know. But I'm happy with it.
Well, but so that's interesting to me, because I think one of the things that Bill was obviously so known for was the mailbags. And yet, would that really be that difficult to do a mailbag every once in a while for the Ringer?
No, it wouldn't be difficult at all. And in fact, I've written him multiple times about this New Grantland. And I check the mail. I check to see if he's ever actually posted not only anything about New Grantland, but anything about a mailbag or anything about readership feedback, and it's all but gone.
So why do you think he's not doing a mailbags anymore?
I just think that he doesn't want to be quite the journalist that he did before. I think it's hard to write. It's hard to be, especially as good as you were. I mean, I imagine it's the same thing as athletes when they realize they've kind of lost their first step in the NBA. When guys realize, I can't, you know, I'm getting cooked by Andre Miller out there. That's when the first time you're like, yeah, maybe I shouldn't. But the thing is, he's not an athlete, so he can keep going. But part of me thinks he's almost afraid.
Yeah, so is he just never going to write again? Because even the Book of Basketball, dude, write. at least once LeBron retires, that would be a natural point to go back in, redo the pyramid, throw Giannis and Jokic and all those guys onto Steph. I mean, are we sitting here saying we wouldn't buy a new version of the Book of Basketball with some new what ifs?
If Bill wrote a new Book of Basketball, I would have it framed and hang it on my wall.
What an opportunity.
In the book, he keeps talking about how LeBron wants to go to the Knicks. And every time I go back and reread the book, I have some of the funnier parts bookmarked. And yeah, in his footnotes, the king of the footnote, Bill Simmons, he always writes, none of this is going to matter when LeBron goes to the Knicks. And then on another page, it'll be, yeah, but LeBron will just go to the Knicks and ruin the NBA. So that's how long ago the book was. Like, he has to go back and redo it. And especially, I expect an article from him when LeBron retires. That's almost a level of, like, respect among the greats. You know what I mean?
True, because he is, all in accounts, number two, if not as a chance at number one. I mean, some people will make the argument, but it's probably going to be 75-25. It's just always going to be MJ, no matter what LeBron does.
Yeah,
but even the number two, I mean, the number two guy does not come along that often.
Oh, no. I mean, if you're second only to Michael Jordan, hell of a freaking career, man.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting, because I don't think it would be unreasonable for Bill to write a mailbag, I don't know, every month or a couple months. And that was always surprising to me too, because we're looking at the Ringer here and we're going, why aren't you trying to bring people to the website? People would want to read anything Bill Simmons. So do one article, and now how many people are going to your website because of that one article? It helps support the other writers.
Yeah, absolutely. I unfortunately think some of his heart is not in the game anymore, and that really disappoints me. But that's part of why I started New Grantland, is because, like, my heart is in the game. I know that there's people out there, especially people that are deep in this niche like we are, that think, I could do this, I could do it, I could write something like that. And I think that really what would be awesome was if I could cultivate a sort of community to live on with this love letter on New Grantland. I mean, I've had three people write for my website so far, and every single time somebody offers to write or I ask them to write and they do, it is like the most amazing feeling.
I love that. Yeah, no, I mean, we're, anybody listening to this pod right now, I mean, we'll, I'll have the details for how to get in touch, because that would be awesome. And I'm sure there are people that would be interested in doing it. So then for Bill, so what's his next step then? Does he launch a new venture after Spotify, and does he start writing again for that? Is he just, like you said, scared to write again? I mean, I remember Bill, when Bill was still a writer, I think I remember him talking to Tony Kornheiser and referencing how maybe it was Tony K that said, it's fucking rough when you're sitting there and you got nothing on that page. You're staring at a blank Microsoft Word document and you don't know what the heck you're going to do. And so once you get that scared feeling, it's just, you don't even think you could do it anymore. So yeah, maybe that's part of Bill. Maybe it's love of the game is gone. Totally agree. But maybe it's also, he's thinking, I don't even know if I can do it. I don't even know if I want to attempt to do it, because I could get schooled so badly that I look like a fool. And so I'll preserve the worth that I have, and I'm not even going to try to go for it. And maybe that's holding the back, because he probably still could write. He's Bill Simmons, for goodness sake.
Yeah, he's Bill Simmons, for goodness. Yeah, he could write for sure. I mean, as guys get old in the NBA, every once in a while, LeBron is, what he's doing is unprecedented. But like a Vince Carter will drop a 25-point game at 42 years old, and you're like, yeah, Vince Carter's still in there, you know? And I guarantee you, Bill Simmons is still in there. If he wrote enough, eventually he would produce something where we're like, that is Bill Simmons. That's the Bill Simmons that we know.
Or, okay, so let's do an alternative thought here. Has the sports media game changed too much where 2014 Bill Simmons doesn't fit into 2024?
I think the way that he was doing it for Grantland, his level of knowledge of the sport, of pop culture, how dialed he was into the players and like Bill Simmons, the celebrity, and also Bill Simmons, the writer, his writing skills may not quite be there anymore. Just as he gets older, he may have not prioritized sharpening them and keeping them as sharp, but I think that still his Grantland brand would fit in today's media. Absolutely. The way that he was writing articles. Now, has he lost his audience and do people believe that he can still do that? I think I might be in the vast minority.
Yeah. Although I think, you know, so this podcast, for example, I get a lot of messages from people or just interactions with people that they haven't listened to Bill in years. And I'll just use listen because obviously nobody's read him in years because he hasn't written anything. But
right.
Yeah, people haven't listened to Bill in years, and then they'll start to listen to this or won't talk back and forth, or they'll go into the Bill Simmons subreddit. And so even though they haven't listened for 5 years, they still know Bill because they listened for so long and read him for so long. And so I think even those people, I think all of those people, if Bill tweeted out, like let's say he takes the LeBron thing, if Bill tweeted out he wrote a LeBron end of LeBron's career column, yeah, I think that lights the sports world on fire. I think everybody who's ever been a Bill Simmons fan at one point in their life goes and reads that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, 100%. 100%. Now, can he pull out on a random Saturday night when there's no Grammys, there's no football, there's the Pistons are playing the Jazz, could he still pull out a Bill Simmons article like he was doing on Grantland and just throw a fastball right down the middle? I don't think he can do that anymore.
Exactly. But and no one's asked him to either. You know, that's the thing. No one's asked him for that. We're asking for maybe a couple columns here and there, and then maybe a couple mailbags here and there. That'd be great. But yeah, no, he's not doing that. As we're talking sports media, I've talked some McAfee versus ESPN lately on the pod. So I wanted to get your thoughts because I do think this is it's just a fascinating sports story in the context of how sports media is evolving and especially how ESPN is evolving in 2024.
Absolutely. What have you said so far on it? I'm interested to hear so I can get some context.
Yeah. Yeah. So what I've said is I think that the call out of this Norby Williamson guy, I went back and I looked through, I probably spent way too much time in this, but I looked through Twitter, like basically what people have said about Norby Williamson, what ESPN personalities have said about him. And essentially it does appear like this has been a high up executive that historically has favored lower risk, low personality sports center type programming over the higher risk, but potentially higher reward personality driven content. And Bill Simmons would lean into obviously the personality driven content, and Bill didn't have kind words for Norby Williamson during and when he was there.
Yeah.
So I think what has been so interesting is that Pat McAfee is this one guy who he kind of sees the Norby playbook emerging, which is trying to undermine his show through the media, through leaking to Andrew Marchand and whatnot. And typically that's just what would have happened, where the high up executive gets their way and whatever he wanted out of Pat, which is either maybe tone down some things, change the show, get more oversight, or maybe even get Pat out of there. I don't know. That would have happened in a different era. But with Pat calling him out by name and with ESPN having all this cord cutting, seeing revenue decline from 12% growth to zero because of all the lost subscribers. Because of that, ESPN, it's tilted to where ESPN's finally in the position where they say, you know what, we're going to let Pat go because we're not going to suspend him. We're going to let him be because we want to be in this higher growth area on YouTube with younger people growing outside the cable TV bundle. Because otherwise, if we don't find ways to grow outside of cable TV, we're dead as a business. So I feel like this was an inflection point for the power balance of media shifting from established companies used to print free cash flow, earnings, and profits. Now they're not as much. And a guy like Pat, without a ton to lose, because ultimately he can take his audience to go somewhere else, that is very powerful. And that meant that ESPN has to deal with Pat calling out his boss.
Exactly. And is this not just the natural extension of the talking head getting so big? I mean, this is the way that I see it, I guess, is that when it first started coming up, Stephen A. Smith would draw viewers, but still Big Brother was ESPN. And now we're getting to the point where the talking heads are almost like ballooning out of proportion and out. Basically, they're becoming the really big fish, but the pond is becoming a lot smaller. So I was thinking about this before the show, was like, eventually, Stephen A. Smith might just have the willpower to just leave ESPN and just create like a Stephen A. Smith channel. And he can do the same. I mean, it's kind of ironic that, I guess to me, ESPN was promoting and thought they had a foot on this revenue stream. But now it's almost like it's the cat is out of the bag and it's starting to get a little bit too big these days. Does that make sense?
It does. And I would bring that to – I totally agree with you on the Stephen A. Smith point. And I would say that this is why I'm very skeptical of Spotify making money on the Bill Simmons deal, because I don't see what profit is in there for Spotify, because Spotify will pay Bill X amount and then they have to make money on top of that. But if Bill doesn't like that contract, he just brings his audience somewhere else. So – yeah, if you're a Pat, if you're a Stephen A, if you're a Bill Simmons, if you're a J.J. Redick, what did J.J. Redick do? He leaves the Ringer.
Yeah,
he goes out and he brings his audience with him and grows the audience. So yeah, it's really about that direct to personality. You have to build it somewhere, but once you build it, you have the power over the platform. And I think that's what's changed recently, which is so fascinating.
I am always get a side against ESPN, so I'm happy with the way the situation is going. I don't know how you feel personally, but I guess in the back of my mind, they did all their sowing and now they have to reap.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. So what do you have against ESPN?
Well, first of all, the big elephant in the room for me is that when Grantland wasn't making money, they just cut it instead of seeing it for like the last bastion of sports integrity that it was. Sure. In pop culture, really, and one of my articles I wrote that as reporting and journalism turned to bubblegum pop, Grantland was still this fine-tuned symphony, and maybe that's a little bit overdramatic, but I still to this day think Grantland was the best sports and pop culture website there ever was. So that's just, I guess I'll always have a hill to die on ESPN.
Yeah, no, that's fair. That's totally fair. Yeah, I guess they would, ESPN and Disney would probably argue and counteract that by saying, hey, we had a great run. We did Grantland in the first place. We did 30 for 30s in the first place. But now, I guess, what did they cut it in 2015?
Yeah,
they were still growing pretty well in 2015. But I think the initial signs of cord cutting were starting then, because they have had, man, it's been, it feels like every year or every couple of years, there's a big ESPN layoff and this just doesn't stop. It just continues.
Yeah. I mean, even they're starting to cut off, or maybe it was TNT, but I mean, like even the major broadcasters are starting to get laid off. They're just kind of seeing who they can lay off to see what sticks and what's not. And the specific reference that I'm making is that Jeff Van Gundy is now getting the axe in favor of Doc Rivers and Doris Burke with Mike Breen on the national NBA finals crew. So people are getting cut left and right. This is starting to be, I mean, if I was someone in this industry on the ESPN side, in the sports side, I would be really worried about job security.
Yeah, that was fascinating, because people didn't really like Mark Jackson that much, but they liked the booth because him and Van Gundy had good chemistry with Breen. But yeah, I mean, ultimately, it's for talent, it's a declining business unless you're a Stephen A. Smith level, because ultimately, if ESPN's not growing revenue, but they have to pay more and more for sports rights, they got to cut expenses somewhere, yeah. And that's going to be the personality. So yeah, there needs to be a resizing probably of what you're paying the average SportsCenter anchor, because I mean, to be honest, they're pretty irreplaceable. They're pretty replaceable at this point. I'm turning on SportsCenter, and I don't really care who's the announcer.
Yeah, no, gone are the days of Stu Scott running stuff. And you, well, I mean, even I remember sitting down and my dad watching ESPN, and my mom would come in the room because Stuart Scott was on the freaking TV. You know, that's never. I don't know if that's ever going to happen again.
No,
Ernie Johnson is almost the last of that breed.
Oh, who? Sorry,
Ernie Johnson, the guy that does Inside the NBA crew. Yeah, I think he's really the last one around.
Oh, so that's a good question for you too. Why do you think Bill never totally worked on TV?
I think he's more of a thinker. So as a writer, I guess I'll make this a deeply personal connection if that's all right. I'm a writer. So in order for me to organize my thoughts, I have to put pen to paper or I have to type. I think Bill is cut from that same cloth. I think he's not somebody that works super good off the cuff, off the top of his head. And for that reason, I don't think his podcasting is the same as his writing. I think in order for him to really be the Bill Simmons that we know and love, we have to read him because he has to have time. And I don't think that's a knock at all. I'm much more eloquent in writing than I will ever be speaking, and that's totally okay. At least I've justified that to myself a million times over. But not everybody is good in a setting where they have to come up with things off the top of their head. Some people are thinkers. Some people are people that can just kind of talk and get it off the top of their head. But I think that's kind of probably why he didn't work on TV, is because in order to be the Bill Simmons that was that in-depth guy making these pop culture references, I don't think that's him on the day-to-day. You know what I mean?
Agreed. I think that's a great point. And then I would follow up then is I'm curious, why did Bill then think Any Given Wednesday would work?
Because it made him money.
Yeah, true. But I think he'd much rather if the show was good and it was running. I mean, I think he was probably thinking he could go on a Bill Maher real-time type run because that was the kind of show he was referencing. He was saying – because I think Katie Nolan asked him in an interview before she goes, like before the show launched, she said, what kind of show do you want it to be? And he said, you know, like Bill Maher, like Dennis Miller Live, and like John Oliver, which then she made in fun of him and said, oh, you just named all HBO shows. But yeah, so Bill was looking for to be a guy that just would kind of be this sports guy doing a show.
But that's not Bill. That's never was Bill. I guess for me, and I'm sorry to interrupt you, It's insane that he would ever think that he was that guy, I guess, to me.
Well, that's exactly my point, is that I'm just wondering why he thought that. I don't know.
But his own hubris got to him, unfortunately.
I think that must have been it. And to borrow a Bill phrase, it was a heat check moment for him. He was hot. He was coming off ESPN. He was this hot commodity. I mean, I reread one of the articles recently about how the courting of Bill Simmons, which I've talked about in this pod too, wouldn't that have been amazing if a documentary crew followed him around for his next move after ESPN?
Oh my gosh.
That would be amazing.
Oh my gosh. You can make it 30 for 30.
It would have been amazing. Yeah, courting the sports guy or something. But yeah, so he's taken Yahoo meetings with the CEO, HBO, Fox, all these various companies. It's like he is the guy that people want. I think that the quote of the HBO guy was like, I want to be in the Bill Simmons business. And that was true. It was a booming business, but then he at least damaged the TV brand of himself by doing Any Given Wednesday, which just didn't work. And then I don't know. I mean, he kind of stopped writing after Any Given Wednesday. I don't know exactly when he stopped writing, but I think it was pretty soon after the show ended.
Yeah, he tried to reinvent his game, to I guess also speak in sports metaphors. He tried to, you know, he lost his fastball, so he thought, you know, well, I can't even do baseball metaphors, but for basketball, he kind of lost his first step, and he thought, okay, I'll become more of a guy that does stuff off the cuff, and I don't think that was ever his game. He was never great at that. It frustrates me. But to me, in my head, Bill Simmons died in 2015. So it's all good.
Yeah, it's sort of like Bill. Bill says, oh, yeah, like The Godfather 3 never happened.
Exactly, yeah. Post-2015 Bill Simmons. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, from your perspective, once Grantland ended, Bill just stopped existing.
Exactly. Exactly.
He wasn't part of the media. Funny. But yeah, no, I think that what Bill has done in his career, I think does we can learn a lot from it, because he beautifully melded pop culture and sports together, first as a columnist, then in a website. He then does the podcasting game, but he did miss on video. And unfortunately for him, video is what is being monetized now. The best. It's TikTok. It's YouTube Shorts now. It's Reels. So, you know, and that would be – that's not really his game. Like, that's a Stephen A. Smith game. Stephen A. Smith, he's on First Take. Let him give a 45-second take. Not even let him give it. Just take the person running the First Take or ESPN TikTok account can chop it up, do 45 seconds, and then boom, you're there. Yep. I don't even think we necessarily want Bill to do that. I agree with you. I think Bill is best formulating a long-term idea, putting it down, having drafts, having editors look at it, being good to go, and then putting it out there. And so unfortunately, Bill has done in his life, he's done writing, podcasting, and video. And we no longer have much video, and that's fine because we don't need it. He's not that good at that.
Yeah, no.
Podcasting, I do enjoy, but I think he's not as good as it now, but whatever. But writing was the best Bill Simmons, and we don't have it anymore, which is crazy.
How do you feel about video? Do you think a video essay version of Bill Simmons would have survived? Bill, the video essay guy. I'm asking because Jimmy Highroller is. I watch. You know, are you familiar with Jimmy Highroller?
I'm not.
Oh my gosh! I'll link you to Jimmy Highroller after this. He's a YouTube video essay guy for basketball, and he is incredible. He goes into depth, but he's funny. He has good takes. He provides some takes, but they're backed up. He goes into deep depth. Jimmy Highroller is almost like if Bill was born in the year 2001. And grew up in the new media landscape, I could have seen him being Jimmy Highroller.
Interesting. Okay, I'll look that up for sure.
Yeah,
I'm wondering if I have to look. I have to go back to what Zach on episode 55 said. I wonder if he said him too. But no, I don't think that would work for Bill, because I think he tried to do it on Any Given Wednesday. I mean, like the first he read video essays, kind of. I guess he was reading from a script, and they just didn't translate.
Yeah, man, Bill the columnist was the guy that I miss.
Yeah. Now, so actually, when did you start reading Bill? What year?
Yeah. So, I mean, it had to have been when I was in middle school. So I was a sophomore in high school in 2015. So some point in middle school, I want to say even as early as fifth grade, but I don't know if what year that was. So I don't want to say, oh, I was in fifth grade, but that turns out to be like 07. But I was around for pretty much the whole Grantland run. I figured it out and read it for years. So that was kind of when I was really, really reading him constantly.
So have you gone back and read some of his older stuff?
Yeah. So before I started the website, I went back. And then about 2 months ago, I felt like I was losing my passion for the website just because I got hired to be a journalist full-time reporting news. And so I went back and reread the website. A few pieces just to kind of like recapture that magic. And I say that in the "it took 4 years, but I did it" article, was that the younger me just had this raw passion, even if he wasn't as good of a journalist. But yeah, I guess that's a long-winded answer, but yes.
Yeah. All right. Why don't we do this? I want to talk about Reddit for a second. And then after we do that, we'll finish up, going a little bit more into some of the articles you have on the site, and then ways to interact with it, potentially subscribe and whatnot, and kind of give you the floor for that. But before we do that, so you, the reason that we're doing this pod right now is that you posted an article that you wrote on the Bill Simmons subreddit, and reaction wasn't necessarily too kind, correct?
No, reaction was actually overwhelmingly negative. I even posted on my Instagram, like, oh, I got my first hate mail. Let's go. This is the first time I've really got anybody really paying attention. And it was fascinating. It was fascinating. But no, overwhelming reception was negative.
Yeah. So part of the reason I reached out is because, so I saw the post and I said, oh, this is interesting. I like this. But was I surprised to see that Reddit was hating on it? I wasn't, because I think Reddit, for whatever reason, there's an aversion to people pursuing creative pursuits, like within the communities that they're in. So I think, like, people on this podcast, for example, when I post the podcast to the subreddit, a lot of people have negative comments on it because they say, oh, what are you doing here? What's this? When in reality, a podcast literally called the R. Bill Simmons Podcast has much more to do with Reddit Bill Simmons than a random, like, Ringer Dish episode of 20 minutes of food talk.
Exactly.
But people still, you know, have their view that the Ringer is it's a legitimate media company. People are getting paid. It's an official podcast. And so I'd rather be okay with that than somebody pursuing a creative passion. And I think that's what happened with you, is that they didn't dislike the content. They just disliked that someone was promoting a creative passion of theirs on the website.
Yeah, yeah. You're 100% right. Only one person criticized the actual writing, and it was sandwiched between just calling me a fraud or an imposter or a wannabe. All of them were just talking about how the idea was stupid, but nobody could knock my content. And so I was like, okay, I'm fine. I'm exactly where I want to be. The one thing that upset me the most was the day that I posted that, I did the best numbers on the website I've ever done. And it was all dirty clicks. And what I mean by that is the exact sort of outrage culture that I'm dunking on, where people think, oh, that's horrible, let me go and leave a bad comment. I got the most engagement out of outrage clicks. And I was like, gosh darn it.
Oh, that's hilarious. Well, I did click on it and I didn't leave a comment, but let's enjoyed it. So
thank you. I appreciate it. And clearly we're doing this. So I'm super excited about this.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So yeah. So let's finish up here. Talk about some of the cool stuff you've got going on of late, and then kind of give the details on if people want to subscribe and whatnot.
Absolutely. So if you type in newgrantland.com, it'll take you to the website. I have three stories up at the top that just rotate every single day. And if you scroll down, it has every single article that's been written. Up at the top, there's editorial, which is kind of like a personal blog / me writing just about some fun stuff. And it's also my contributor section. So there's stuff like that where people who have written for me before can post their stuff. Under sports, I've had my dad write about the NFL and also stuff about the NBA. And then I've written stuff about the NBA, and you'll find that under sports. Under entertainment is really where I found my stride as a writer. So I have some reviews. I reviewed John Mulaney's latest stand-up special, Baby J. I have a personal connection to that. I'll let you read it. I'm a film major, a writing and media major. And so I have an article called In Defense of the Last Jedi up there, which is one that has generated a lot of views because of the outrage, but I make solid journalistic points there. And then if you go to features, it actually has my senior thesis for college, Disaster in Film, which is a very, very, very long read. And then the social commentary in the MCU is another thing like that. And just clicking on these, I need to fix the links. But it is what it is. So yeah, if you're interested in subscribing, you can just head over to the subscribe subheading and click it. All you have to do is enter your email and then hit send. You don't have to actually put in your name or anything like that. And I will never spam you. The only time you'll get an email is when I have posted a new article. That's it. And I also want to put this last thing out there. If you're somebody that's a writer by trade or by passion, please send me an email. If you don't want to subscribe, you can just send me your email as well, if you're interested in posting things to the website. Because that's what made Grantland really special, was that it was a group and a community that made it to do. If I could have Grantland be a community instead of just me posting on New Grantland, that would be my ultimate dream.
I love that. And now, do you do... Do you like Twitter or Instagram, or what would be your preferred social media site if you have one?
Yeah. So anybody can reach out to me. My actual preferred method, I'm not a social media guy, okay, and I feel dirty doing promotion, but I'm much more active on Twitter these days, @@newgrantland. You can find me on Twitter. I also have that same handle on Instagram. So I have them on my phone. I don't often post, but anytime that I get a message there or anything, I always respond.
Okay. So it is the one that I've been, just New Grantland.
Yep.
On Twitter.
Yep. New Grantland on Twitter.
Okay. Yeah. Then I'll include that in the show notes. Awesome, man. If people are listening to this and they check it out, what would be the top article you think people should check out?
I'll put it on the very front middle page for it before this goes live. But my best work, I believe, is called The Protagonist. It takes everything that I've kind of put into practice. It takes my journalistic skills. It takes my screenplay background in screenwriting. It takes I was a child actor, so I did that for a little while. It takes all of those things and combines it, and it's called The Protagonist. And it's the one with the picture of Thanos in a circle. That is definitely the story that you should read. And then also, Welcome to New Grantland is obviously the intro to the site. So if you're interested in really what the site is about, click on Welcome to New Grantland.
Awesome, man. I'm very much hoping that people will check it out. I will tell the listeners I've checked it out. I loved it. Referenced some of it as we were talking today. So certainly if you're listening to this pod and you liked the pod, then I would highly encourage everybody who's listening to check it out. And even if you're not a big sports media guy, there's plenty of other stuff there. And look, it's a website called New Grantland. How could you not check it out? If you're a Bill Simmons fan, at least just for curiosity, what does a New Grantland website look like? You have to check it out.
It's pretty exciting. I have spent a lot of time into it, and I never intend to make a dime off it. I'm sticking to the exact principle of Grantland, which was content over clicks.
Love it, man. Anything else we got to cover? Did we pretty much hit what we want to?
I think we hit everything. I can't thank you enough for the opportunity to do this podcast and use your platform to spread the word about New Grantland. That's really admirable of you, and I really appreciate it.
Love it, man. Well, I appreciate your time. And yeah, I mean, I'm doing a creative pursuit here, not making any money on it. You're doing a creative pursuit, same thing. Cut from the same cloth. Yeah, and I'm looking for the right word to do what I'm doing to Bill, because I'm honoring, maybe me honoring Bill isn't necessarily the right word.
This is my love letter, is what I always write. This is my love letter to Grantland, but
yeah, so maybe the Arvo Simmons podcast isn't necessarily a love letter to Bill, We're using Bill as an Bill is inspiring us.
Absolutely.
Pursuits. That's what it is together. So yeah. So for someone who has done something like this in kind of a similar vein that I'm doing, absolutely more than happy to have you on, man. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you very much.
All right, man. Well, appreciate that. Appreciate your time. Appreciate everybody listening, and check out the site, newgrantland.com. New Grantland on Twitter and Instagram if you want to follow there. And I'll have the links in the show notes. And with that, we'll have another RBS pod out for you soon. So cheers, everybody.
Cheers. Thank you so much.